Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I want to talk to you about rotoballer.com. If you guys know me by now, you've listened long enough, you know I have my written content for DFS and other season-long fantasy products over at rotoballer.com. And if you're still grinding along in the NFL streets, season-long playoffs, DFS for the NFL, don't wait any longer. Go to rotoballer.com, get the NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? Rotoballer's NFL Premium Pass includes lineup tools, projections, and DFS cheat sheets for all formats. Get access to exclusive articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chat rooms. I do the weekly DFS cash game values, even and then this Saturday even, doing some extra previews for the week's DFS slates. Come check all that out and join in on the winning and take 50% off any premium pass, not just football. If you want basketball, baseball's coming up, all that good stuff. 50% off any premium pass. Use my promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off. So you get 60% off a premium pass. It's that simple. So get in, get ready, finish the NFL season in a strong, strong way with rotoballer.com, NFL Premium Pass. Already at 50% off now. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off when you purchase. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 427. Going to talk some more NFBC, some more just fantasy baseball drafting in general to get you ready for the 2022 season that will be on us before you know it. In order to do this, I have a special guest joining me on the show. You can find his podcast, the Draft Champions Podcast, with lots of awesome guests and Mike the Mouth. And you can also check out his work on Twitter at MilesStrawMVP because it might be one of the greatest uses of just anything I've ever seen, the Miles Straw video. But his name is Zach Waxman. Zach, how are we doing, man?
What's up, Bubba? Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for joining me. How long did it take you to come up with the idea to go get a cameo with the Miles Straw? Because that is freaking amazing.
Not long at all. It sort of dawned on me at like one day, and I just said, I got to do this. It's like, why not? Because I'm like, does he have a Miles? Like, I actually went on his profile and it linked to his cameo. So I'm like, oh, that's awesome. This is perfect. Let's just do it. And then I thought it was like $35. I'm like, easy, done. Yeah.
It's fun because in the Battle of the Pods DM that we're all a part of, it's now opened up a rabbit hole where Justin Mason's buying his own. Cedric Mullins wants to tell himself he's great. And it's going to be interesting to watch as we're all bored with the lockout and just drafting like crazy. There's going to be a lot of goofy stuff coming on, but you were the originator of that. It's freaking so funny. So funny. Why don't you let everybody know about your podcast and everything, though, before we get rocking and rolling talking drafts?
Podcast is just really just NFBC focused, just talking about what I'm trying to do this year is, like, of course, getting great guests, but talking, it's sort of like a Teach a Man to Fish podcast rather than going into specific player analysis. I'm trying to focus a lot on strategy and just asking questions that I really am interested in rather than just like going through the motions. And I really want to, if I'm learning, I figure everyone else is learning. So that's really what I want. And like when I first started it, I honestly didn't really know what I wanted to do with it, but it's like, now I realize like people think like I'm in an industry. I'm not really, I'm just a player. Like, I don't want to really like do the same things a lot of other people with podcasts do, but I think it's been good because I've been learning and I've also made like a lot of good good friends like by doing it. So that's what I enjoy about it, really.
That's a good point. That's why I laugh a lot of the times. I tell people I have guests on and I sit here and take notes on the side because I'm trying to learn from. I wouldn't have somebody on here if I didn't think they were worth learning from. Let's put it that way. So I think it's a good point. Like, we should all gain something. And I think that's one of the best things. And you can ask like the best players out there, the Vlads of the world, the Dussos and everybody, that if they're not learning from everybody else they're playing with, they're probably not going to ever get much better. So there's a lot to be. And I have a question for you on that as we get going. So I think there's a lot to be garnered from that, for sure. We're going to start off. We're going to kind of bounce around all over the place. But for those that don't know Zach, we've had John Fish on the show. These two like to battle it out, I think, for most drafts in a draft season from time to time. How many were you in last year?
I was in the NFBC around 60. Okay. And then probably like 75 if you add in everything.
Yeah. Man, that's crazy. But how many how many fab leagues did you say? Because I know you did a lot of DCs and stuff. How many fab leagues did you have?
I was in 13 fab leagues.
Okay.
It's funny you mentioned Fish. Like, I was talking to him yesterday, and like, it's like we've almost become synonymous where, like, if you mention one, you can't mention the other. It's kind of like bad.
It's bad in a good way. Like, you guys are something else. It's fun. That's why I was asking Zach right before we started. I said, so how many, because he said he might be on the clock during the show. And I'm like, well, the way you draft, I wouldn't be surprised. And I asked him, I said, how many are you in? He said, 4. I'm like, really? Like, I expected so much more, but I guess if you start in November, it adds up pretty quick.
I was guessing. I was guessing when you asked me. I'm actually looking down in 7.
Okay, that makes much more sense now. 7 makes a lot more sense.
Two of them are on fan track. So
gotcha. A little different. Yeah. A little different for sure. How do you juggle that much? Because I know some people like to do like one draft at a time, so they can kind of focus. Some guys do a handful, like you. I have like 3 going right now. So how do you juggle all these different ones going on at once to make sure you kind of don't cross over things?
That's a good question. It's challenging. You got to like, they're slow drafts. So sometimes you just got to take your time and regroup and look at your tracking sheet on each draft and make sure that you're not really mixing anything up, because there's sometimes where I'm like, didn't that guy go already? I'm like, how did I miss that guy? I'm like, I thought he was drafted. I'm like, oh, it was the other draft.
Yep, I'm guilty of that. I took a third first baseman recently. I'm like, well, I needed the power, so I could justify these things. But it's always like you got a million things going on, and it won't kill your draft, but there's obviously things you're missing.
It's definitely challenging during and afterwards. If I did less drafts, I'd probably do better on average, but they're just so much fun. They are. Drafting is the best part.
And they're a great learning tool, and that's why I kind of wanted to talk to you about it, because people talk about you doing mock drafts, but the development of these, like even the NFBC 50s, if you want a cheaper price scale, or if you are a fan of Fantrax, you can get cheap ones there just to have a little skin in the game, just to make kind of honesty to the situation. What do you try to like learn from like the start of draft season towards maybe March when you're really getting into the big money stuff to really, what are you trying to gain in learning to be ready for the big dance, basically?
Just how your draft flows from different spots is one of the things. Another thing is really scouting your opponents, because a lot of the people you're drafting with now are the people you're going to be drafting with in March, especially the NFBC like community. It's like there's a lot of overlap, and it's very like incestuous, I guess is a way to put it. Richard Zito has been in like 6 of my drafts, so I know exactly what players he wants. I'll get into that a bit later, but there's that. And, also just like, I've talked about this before, like ABD, always be drafting.
Yeah.
Like you can see the ADP on the NFBC site, but that doesn't tell you the whole picture. You can like, you know that this player, if this player has like a 250 ADP, it's like, I've been in like the last 6 drafts. I know that number's not 250. That number's really like 220 in reality. So if you want that player, you're going to have to take him at this place. And I know this particular player likes this player, so I'm going to have to take him maybe even earlier, or maybe I'm going to have to build my draft plan without that player that I like, because he's just going to be taken at such a ridiculous cost.
No, I like that a lot, because I just did that in the DC I'm in with you, I believe. I was noticed, like, it's totally a different draft than I've done so far this year, the way I've approached it. I don't not like it, but it's a lot more challenging to me than what my normal structure is. That's kind of the fun of doing these early drafts, to kind of find your area of what you want to do come draft day. But like I went in Jaren Duran's a guy I'm torn on, and we don't have to go down a big player profile on Jaren Duran, but like, he's got the power speed combo. We've seen the minors. It didn't really pan out last year. Should still play with the Red Sox this year. There's question marks there. And I was looking at him. He's gone as high as like 250-ish or something, as low as like 4-something. His ADP is like 330. So it's like you said, he's going higher than that ADP shows on that chart more often than not if you want to get him. So it's already – it's only December and guys are already jumping. Or January. Guys are jumping up.
Yeah, this draft's been like the last we just finished one, and that was a really challenging one I found near the end. And this one's been a little bit more, I guess, like unorthodox, like around the like rounds 15 through like 18 where we are right now. Like players that I've been looking at, I'm struggling filling out my my starters right now and figure out what to do. Whereas the other draft we were doing, it was sort of like all the late end guys or the late guys were getting jumped up a lot, which might happen again.
Yeah, that's been my problem exactly. This draft is I'm having issues just getting like my starting roster compared to what I've been able to do in other drafts. It's been a weird dynamic, but we'll get to that in a bit here. Last season, yeah, you drafted a handful of drafts. I know you won the an overall competition. You've done very well. I won't forget about that, by the way.
Thank you. You
did very well. So why don't you just like let everybody know, because there's one thing to say, hey, I'm gonna go draft like 70 leagues. But, you know, there's also a thing to say, yeah, I did pretty good, too. Like, how did things go overall for you?
They did well. Like, obviously, that winning that overall is like, sort of like something I'm proud of. And the year before that, I didn't win money in the NFBC, and I'm learning and I'm getting better. But draft champions are one thing that I'm focusing on a lot. I did not do well in the draft champions leagues. Just for, if we're going to go over how I did last year, I did 16 DCs. Shut off my email here, but you can hear that. But I did 16 DCs and only cashed in a couple of them, and that was my biggest I guess weakness last year are the DCs. I did a couple of best balls as well, same idea. Like the battle of the pods with the DC, I got third. You finished second in that one, and I got third, so that was good. The Palazzo one that McGovier did, I also finished third in that league. So those are two DCs that I did okay in. The tag team league that we did with all our friends, me and Curling got first place on that one. TGFBI, I think you were in my league. I won that one. I did 4 OCs last year. I'll probably do more this year. And I won 2 of them, and I got second in the other one. So that was good. My mains, I got 4th and 6th. So I did 2 mains, and I got 4th and 6th place. So that's not good. But that was sort of offset with winning the overall in terms of money. And then did 7 DC auctions. I won 2 of them, so that was profitable. I did 12 NFBC 50s, and I got cash in 4 of them, 2 first, 2 second. So that was profitable. And Yahoo Fantrax was okay there. So basically, like, second full year in NFBC doing that many leagues, I'm saying if I'm in the black and not in the red, I'm saying I'm happy, and I was. So like I didn't make out like a bandit, but I profited overall, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I feel you. That's how I was last year. I didn't do that many leagues, but I made out well. I got a ticket into the OC on a qualifier. Like, I ain't crushed the competition, but I finished in the black, as you said. So now we build on to the next year. A couple things you mentioned there. You won 2 DC auctions. You won that overall auction that you did. Do you find that, I'm guessing, that you like doing auctions more than drafts? And if so, what's your reasoning behind that?
Yeah, no, I do enjoy the auctions better, and I think I perform better in the auctions, just because you can have a more solid plan going into the drafts, and I know what I need to do. Whereas in a snake draft, your plans can get really changed very drastically, and you have to adapt on the fly. Whereas the auction, even if you like part of your plan gets foiled, where like one player ends up going for way more than he does, you can have that. You have it's easy to back up that plan, and just basically during an auction, you can sort of have the numbers in your head just by doing a lot of them, saying like knowing what players went for this draft versus other drafts, so you can sort of keep a tally, sort of like counting blackjack in your head. Like, is the deck stacked in my favor in terms of value going forward because other people have blown all the money, or am I going to have to sort of play catch up? And then it's just sort of like having that mental math in your head. And I find that I'm able to do that and just capitalize on some of the values in the auctions, I hoped.
It's something that's not talked about enough, I don't think, because auction is not a talked about enough topic, because it's not as I guess popular might not be the right word, but it's not out there as much as just doing snake drafts. But it's so true. You can go into a snake draft with a strategy and it's out the window in the second or third round, where your strategy in an auction, like you said, is you can script it out pretty well. And every once in a while it can be different, but you can go in saying, hey, I want to spend X amount of money on these, like I want three of these four players or something. And you can get like by two of them at least. Like you can make things work. You can have a great end game where, hey, these are the dollar guys I really want. I know if I get these guys, it'll help me pay for these guys and so on and so forth, where you can't really do it. Like in a snake draft, you might only get Fernando Tatis Jr. per se, but in an auction, you can get, say, Tatis and Harper, or you can, there's so many things you can do together because you can be willing to spend. So it's definitely a different way to do it. And I can see the appeal to that. And obviously doing these just DC snake drafts you're doing helps you learn the player pool that'll get you ready for the auction to know, hey, I can go spend on X, Y, and Z to make things work, to calculate that out. Something else you mentioned, you said you might do more OCs this year. Are you becoming more of a fan of 12s versus 15s, or what's the reasoning behind doing more OCs? Because personally, I like 12s over 15s. I've talked about it recently with certain guys, but a lot of people love 15s over 12s. So what's your feeling on it?
I've just noticed that it suits my style better. So like I said, the DCs are something that I struggled with, and I'm learning what I did wrong. So like I took too many chances, and I didn't fill out the back end of my roster with enough. You really want guys that have the potential to be good rather than the potential to play. Meaning that like you want guys like Trevor Rogers and Logan Webb who are going to be up and have that potential to step up, rather than taking guys like Jordan Balazovic, Corey Abbott that might not even be up but maybe have the higher upside. I think that's what it's about. I think I need to fill out the back end of my roster more with the Trevor Rogers, easier said than done. And then also just taking less chances, like the Jared Klenics or this year Julio Rodriguez. These DCs, it's not really the thing for that, because maybe you can stomach one, but not many of those blows, because like we'll get into it. Like every one of these roster spots and your starting roster spots for these DCs are so precious in these 15s. And I've noticed it, like I did better in the Fab leagues than I did in these move leagues, because I was able to correct those sort of chances I took. So that's something that I'm really trying to change my approach with in the DCs this year. And the other thing with the DCs is saves. Saves is a big thing that I think you're going to ask about.
Yes. We'll get into that, because that is a hot topic every single day that you log into Twitter. Is why are you paying for saves? Well, it's called the structure of the league you're in. That's the best way I can put it for you folks. In a redraft format, yeah, not going to push them up as much. You might, but you're probably not. Like you can make things work there. Where in this format, Phil pointed it out beautifully. Like he only drafted, I think, two main closers and didn't get a lot late, but they stayed healthy and they racked them up because, and we'll talk about it. You mentioned later the 80th percentile numbers in a DC, they're much lower than in a Fab league because of the differences like that. So There's a lot of structure stuff, and you got some good stuff we're going to probably talk about later to get to that. So we'll pass on that for now, but there's format. Like it's so, so important. It sounds silly, but it's so, so different. You mentioned you learned like the saves and whatnot, and to be quote safer is not the right word, but get the more consistent positive player than the flashy player. That's a very confident thing. Is there anything you learned, maybe like certain positions you wanted to overload on? Because like Rob DiPietro, he won an overall in the 2020, and he talked about like people forget about outfield because you got to start five of them, and I think it's shallow quick. Starting pitchers that Phil loads up on. Is there something you learned positionally that you want to do differently this year?
Well, I think it changes every year to year. So I think you learn to look at it, and you learn to, like people say, drop backwards, see what positions are scarce. I think it's both the corners this year that you have to be careful with. I think people have beat that to death, and I agree with it. I think I've said this before. I think in general this year, hitting has become, right, at least as it stands right now with what we know, hitting has become more scarce than it was last year. So people say, oh, outfield's so scarce compared to last year. I was able to get my outfielders, a lot of outfielders that I liked after pick 250 last year. It's just because of the lack of information, like McCutcheon hasn't signed anywhere, et cetera. I think in general right now, just all hitting is scarce. So I think that it might make sense to like really hammer, like you need your pitching, and I think you need to get at least like I like to have at least three starters and one, at least three starters and at least one reliever before round nine for pitching still. But I think like after you hit that mark, you really just got to hammer the bats, especially in these DCs, because even more so than last year.
Yeah, it's true, because one thing we've harped on a lot is, you know, in years past, it was kind of like the top 20 pitchers, and it fell off a cliff, give or take a rough number. This year, it just seems so deep. Like, you might not have the elite guys might be like 8 to 10 of them, but then it's just, you can find guys for a lot of rounds, like here and there. And then like a pocket will leave, and you'll be going through the ADP or whatever as you're like setting your queue. And all of a sudden there's another pocket of like seven guys. You're like, oh, I take any one of them, like no problem. And you just kind of go through the motion, like you're saying, pitching wise, where, yeah, it's saves and bats, man. You get past round 30, 35, and the bats get scarce, like disgustingly scarce. Because you were talking about getting consistency, like plate appearances, guys that are going to play and get you a good production, and it's harder and harder to find. So I think it's a great strategy, and that's why the one we're in right now, I feel a little weird because I took more pitching early than I usually do, because I've been trying. Like the first one I did with you, it was like, okay, I got one or two good starters, a closer or two, but it's just all bats. And it's been a little different this last go around, and it's been a much more uneasy feeling going through the draft. Not that it won't work, you never know, but it's just like definitely a thing. Have you seen your strategy change? Are you trying different strategies in your drafts? What are you doing in that regard?
Yeah, I'm trying. I think it depends on where I'm at in the draft, where I'm drafting from. But yeah, I've gotten pocket aces, but I've also taken three straight batters before. It depends. It's really KDS dependent on what I'm trying to do. But because I'm drafting so many, right, you really want to change. You really want to diversify. And I think that's one of your questions later about like what, like how drafting a lot of drafts can help you. I think that it helps in that you're just like taking the best player that you're playing. You're taking the best player available, not reaching on players.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's best player available. That's a whole nother hot topic on fantasy football Twitter these days. But there is a lot to be said about that, especially early in drafts. You can kind of, you know, take the best thing, but you can also look at positional scarcity and whatever you think. You mentioned corner infield as a scarce position, so I'm looking forward to chatting with that. But one of the last things I want to talk about from just like last season and maybe going into this season, how many drafts are you trying to do, or how many drafts is too many drafts, I should say?
Probably too many drafts already. I think I'm done. I think I'm done drafting. That's it.
No one believes you. No one believes you at all.
Yeah, like I said, I said two DCs a month. So this in the 6 months leading.
So, yeah,
I'm past that already. It's just too difficult. So I'm thinking 20 DCs cap, and I'll probably, the DCs will probably wean down, and then I'll get into some OCs. I've already done two OCs as well. Wow. Yeah. So I'm thinking six OCs, 20 DCs, bunch of 50s, and then best balls don't count because you don't manage them.
What about how many mains you plan on doing?
One or two tops. I said to myself I'm going to do one, and then my buddy Graham, Shrimpo captain, we might do one together. So we might, I'll probably do one and a half.
Now, see, you teamed up with Curlin, so that's like a whole task in itself. So it's hard to ask the right question here, but you're going to team up with Graham, like you said. How do you like having a partner? Because I've heard so many mixed stories on it. Like, I know my personality, it's hard for me to like concede when I'm stuck on something, but some people work phenomenally with it. And I see the approach also where it's like, hey, it's another sounding board that they might see something I don't see. And that's a big thing too. So how do you feel going with a partner? Like, how do you approach it type thing?
Well, it was really easy after Curlin quit.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of like hinting around it. I'm like, I remember in the chat, it was just like, yeah, he kind of took over the team.
Yeah, it was easy once he was quit. So, but before that, it was, yeah, you had to deal with him. So it was tough. No, I'm just kidding. During the draft, we had a good plan, and like, we mapped out. We ended up winning the league, but we didn't go far enough in our plan in terms of what we what we wanted to do, like in the mid rounds. And then we underestimated how difficult it is to draft with someone in the mid round. So then we ended up just going like, okay, you want this guy, I want this guy. Okay, you pick this time, I'll pick next time. And then basically we had to fab our way out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that being interesting because you have two different strategies going into it. It's like, well, shit. now we got a problem. We got to fix. But yeah, no, that's good. You, Curlin, he knows, he'll listen that we're all messing around with him. So it's all fun and games. But
he knows we're busting his balls.
So yes, he definitely does. He texts a million times a day, and that's all I do is bust his balls. So it's lots of fun. But let's talk about some of the DC stuff you've learned so far since you've been active in them. I've had two with you already. It's been fun. And I'm going to jump around the topics here, but just as they come to my mind, something you mentioned earlier is drafting with so many guys like Zito's in the drafts. I'm not going to mention the name because some people get very nervous about releasing names, but like right. You went into my DM one day and said, hey, this guy's going to take this player. And I'm like, how do you know this? And you're like, I'm in like six other drafts with him. This is what he does. Are you taking notes, or is this just like you've like paid attention to it enough? You just know off the top of your head. What are you doing? Like, do you have like a log of like, this is what guys do?
I have a log, yes. Okay. And this is, you know, I just started it. I didn't do it last year. So this year I've completed. I have a log on you, brother. Actually, I've done homework on you.
That must be messy.
So I'll go into the draft, and I'll go into the draft results, and I'll put it into Excel. And I basically made a formula that basically takes the draft results and drags it into like a column by column format where you just have to input the names. And then what I've done is I have a log of who's been in each draft. So if I go in, so now we're doing a draft together, I pull up and like, okay, who's in this draft? Ray Murphy's in this draft. Yeah. Tomany's in this draft. I've been in drafts with these guys before. So then I go back and I look at their previous drafts, and I have them column by column. Like, okay, this guy really likes this player here. So for example, in this draft, I'm trying not to we'll mention names and not players.
There you go.
So like I won't give away any of the players, but we can mention the name. So for example, Ray Murphy's in our draft, and I'm picking third. He's picking first. So I know what he's done in the prior draft. So in the second round, I knew that I wanted a hitter and a closer, but I figured that like maybe this hitter probably lasts, but I know that it's not going to last here because given what he did last time, I know easily he reached on two guys last time. So I know he's going to reach on them again, probably unless he's trying to diversify, which is what I don't know. But so I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this guy way earlier than I normally would have because I know he's going to be gone on this turn. So I did that. And then I'm just hoping one of my, I wanted a closer. I'm hoping a closer returns to me, which he did. So basically I did what I wanted to do, but it was out of order. And that just is a result of me taking notes. Maybe I'm over analyzing this, but like example Zito, I have like six different drafts on him. So like, I don't know, maybe he's adapted over time, but I know basically the players that like he's taking the same player in the 50, like he's taking the same player in round 50 every time. So if I want that player, I'm going to take him in round 48.
And see, that's smart. It's not overanalyzing to me. Some people might think it is, but if you have a formula or a tool like you do, it makes total sense. And Ray Murphy posted his early round, so I'll mention it. This isn't what I was talking about earlier. I was talking about a different player, but you on Murphy, you also sent me a message that goes, I guarantee you take Sandy Alcantara. And yeah. He posted, he took him right there and around just like he did. You're like, I know he's going to take him, and boom, he took him. And there's something to be said about that, especially when you're close to the turn, like you are there, because it'll help you know who you can take now and hopefully take later. So you can play that game, which helps a lot. Like, I totally have no problem with that at all. And you got a book on certain guys, like everyone's gonna have a book on me. You can take, you know, he's gonna try to take like these four guys almost every draft or whatever, something along those lines. Problem is, I'm in the same draft spot more often than not right now, so it's kind of tough to say who I'd really take. But when you're in the middle of the draft, like, you've done so many drafts. When you're in the front, it's usually the kind of a similar player pool you're coming out of at the back, so on and so forth. So you kind of have this window of players for the most part you're going out of. You mentioned KDS earlier. What have you found you like so far? Because I kind of want to be on one of the ends for the most part. I haven't been a huge fan of the middle so far.
So yeah, KDS, I definitely like it might sound obvious, but I definitely like being in the at the front of the draft because you get those. You get, like, I think there's just those six really good players. Those six really, really good hitters. So I think three is ideal for me because if I'm third, I'm getting one of Trey. Like there's Trey, Tatis, J-Ram, and like I'll even include Bichette there. Like in sometimes people like Three, you're not risking anything. Even four, you're hoping, like, I'm fine with four because, or even five, because sometimes Vlad and Soto fall into there and you can get one of those players. So, like, top five, you're golden. I don't believe it. I'd almost rather be closer to five than one because you get the better player in the second round and you're not as close to the ends where you lose on runs. Definitely want to be in the top eight or nine. Like, I don't want to put any, like, later picks before eight or nine, but I'll sometimes I think 12 is really bad, like, because you're not, like, you're going to be out of that range for the first round, but you're also going to miss out on, like, maybe like Acuna falling to you in the second round. I think that's really bad. But 15 is for sure the worst, and four reasons why 15 is the worst, like, by far. Some people want the turn, but I'll tell you, 15 is, like, worse than any spot because, one, you have to reach. Like, at least when you're on pick number one, when you're in these DCs, you get a good player. 15, you're not really getting one of those elite players. Plus, you're gonna have to reach on your players throughout the draft, and you also don't get any values. So, say you're drafting in round eight, there's a player that's dropping way past his ADP. Every single player will have a chance at that player before you do at 15. So, like, if you're drafting from the 13th spot instead of the 15th spot, at least you have the chance to pounce on that player dropping before the two guys behind you. And if you're in the 15 spot and you have, like, a really good player in front of you picking from 14 and a player is dropping, you're like, I'm screwed. I'm not getting this guy. Another thing is, like, I feel it's like there's a tier break in the middle of that second round. So what you gain in picking earlier in the second round isn't really what you might lose by picking, like, a worse spot, like 15 versus 13. I don't think it really matters that much. It only matters when you get to, like, eight or nine. And then also, like I was saying, why I don't want 15 is because I got a book on the players. So if I'm drafting from, like, 13 or 3, I likely know the tendencies of a lot of the drafters by now, and I can go back to my reference encyclopedia of drafters and, like, look and see who they might take. So it will give me a little bit of an advantage there. And then even if I haven't played with them, you can see what positions they've taken. So you might have a slight advantage knowing, okay, this guy's already filled up all his corners, so I can wait on corners. So there's really no incentive for me to pick right at the corner.
I like that. That's fun because in years past, I loved the back end. I loved it. I thought it was fun. Go get two pitchers or go do this or that. But I'm with you. It's like, and you said it sounds like it's so easy. But when people start drafting, they'll understand because I'm 100% with you. Like, I want one of the top four or five picks easily. Like, because I feel so much better getting one of those guys, the five category guys. I can just be like, okay, we're good. Let's go. Because the farther back you get, like, there's the Kyle Tuckers, if you believe. Acuna is actually moving up these days, which is interesting. But it's like, Vlad's fun, but you got to imagine some regression. He doesn't steal bags. Like, he's still going to be good, but is he pick six good? Maybe. Mm-hmm. The hard one, it's like, you have Bryce Harper, who I think is a great ball player, really good ball player. He checks the boxes, as they say, but it's never feels good taking him in the first round. It just never does, but good ball player. There's a handful of guys like that. Or it's like, okay, well, all these hitters are gone. Let's take, you know, Garrett Cole or Corbin Burns. Let's just do it. It's such a weird dynamic compared to that top bat where you still feel so comfortable. And more importantly, when it comes back to, like, that 2-3 turn, because you mentioned that tier drop off, that 2-3 turn feels so much better than that 3-4 turn in the back end. Like, so much better. Like, you walk away from those first three picks going, I can win with this team. Where once you've gone through round four of the back end, you're just like, we're still going to have to do some work. Or I'm reaching again, like you said. Like, I feel so bad about my first two picks. I'm reaching for these other two picks. It's a weird dynamic this year compared to years past. And not saying people can't win from the back end. I think you did some research, actually, on where position – didn't you do research on where draft picks won from? Or is that someone else that did that?
I did it based on when you drafted in terms of time.
Like, oh, time of year. Yeah. Okay. What, real quick, if you can remember. If not, don't worry about it. What did you learn from that? Because for the most part, it seemed like it didn't matter what time of year you drafted from.
I learned nothing. It was inconclusive. There was no correlation between winning your league and drafting early or actually finishing well on the overall is what we're looking at. There's no correlation. I think it was a trade-off between between two things. So one is your drafting players eventually got injured or maybe out for the season. Like Verlander in years past, that was last year, but players just, like, losing their jobs, going to Japan, whatever. Things just, like, you'll have more – there's more hindsight when you're drafting early. Not hindsight, but you just have more information when you're drafting later. But also the flip side of that is why people will do better earlier is because there's enormous values. Like Trevor Rogers and Logan Webb were going in the 600s early last year, and those guys got pushed up into like the 300s later. So you missed it on those values later in draft season. But I think the biggest thing is just better players draft early. I think you got the same usual suspects here. Like you see, like every league has like Brian Slack in it, and like whoever else, like you, like. I don't know, whatever. Like a lot of all these players are good players that are drafting now.
Did you jump in the one you did? Never mind, you did that one you just jumped into last night. My God, that's like a main event lineup. that was pretty wild.
Lindy Hinkleman's in that one.
Yep.
Right.
Vlad Sedler, isn't he in that one? No, Vlad's not.
No, Vlad's not in that one.
Not in that one, but yeah, you have. There's a list. There's a list of people in that league. That's for sure.
Kev's in that league.
Kevin,
Roto surgeon
for hot take surgeon is in that league.
Yeah, I think that's who you're mixing up Vlad with.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Kev's a carry. He's a good dude. I like giving him a hard time, but he's a fun one because he's going to let you know when he's right. So just remember that when he gets something in that draft, it's yours. But you have a lot of fun in that draft room. That's for sure. Let's take a quick break here from Bench with Bubba to talk to you about Fantrax, everybody. Fantrax.com. It is a great place to play fantasy sports, especially fantasy baseball, with the 2022 fantasy baseball season live and happening as we have entered the 2022 calendar year. It is January. So go to Fantrax.com to create your fantasy baseball teams. You can do best balls, draft and hold, season longs, best dynasty platform you can find with the deepest player pool. If they don't exist, let them know. If there's a guy from Korea, Japan, wherever, let them know. They will make it happen for you. Customizable, anything you want. They have the different ways to enter your money. They can hold your money for you. If your league has fees, all kinds of great stuff at Fantrax.com. I run draft and holds and best ball leagues. If you're interested in those, check out my Twitter feed. I got you covered there. And if you're new to Fantrax, it's really, really cool. Go to Fantrax.com/Bubba to let them know I sent you, and they will set you up. You can bring your whole setup from another site. Let them know. Boom. They'll make it happen for you over at Fantrax.com. But it gets even better. You know, Fernando Tatis Jr., great ball player, nearly an MVP. If you like Fernando Tatis Jr. and you're new to Fantrax, go to Fantrax.com/Bubba. Use promo code Tatis, T-A-T-I-S, to have a chance to win a free autographed Fernando Tatis baseball. So go to Fantrax.com/Bubba. Get the season started for you in a big, big way over at Fantrax, drafting and rocking and rolling. And for now, back to Bench with Bubba. A couple strategies that you maybe have picked up on. We'll start with, you kind of hinted at earlier, it's a topic I think I've talked about on every show and everybody else has, because it's fun getting different people's opinion, especially someone like yourself who's done so many drafts and have seen the mess of it all. Relief pitchers. And it's, like I said, it's a hot topic right now. People are saying you shouldn't, you know, why are they getting pushed up, blah, blah, blah. But with no fab, you kind of need it. That's kind of the way it goes here. So, it goes so fast. If you're not on the aggressive side, your bench is loaded with what ifs. Is the way I say it, and it could work, but I kind of personally like a little bit more stability in my life once in a while, because everything else is a mess. So why screw up right out the gate? Who knows? How are you approaching it in these drafts when it comes to relief pitching?
I want an early reliever. I want early reliever bracket S bracket other bracket. So really one or two, depending on how things go. I was trying to figure out why I did so bad in these DCs last year. And I think one of the things I found was I didn't draft relief pitchers. I just got kind of cocky with it. I think I did 16 of them last year, and I drafted a relief pitcher before the 9th round twice. So I think I had like Edwin Diaz in two drafts. And then all my other drafts were like Richard Rodriguez, trying to like bundle up all the Reds closers. Like I had Anton and Garrett and Sims everywhere. I'm like, okay, as long as I have all three of them, I'm good. Guess what? No, not good. So that was a huge area for me that I struggled with. In the DCs, because there was no fab. So now I'm making a little bit more of an effort of getting that early closer. And it's something that I'm really focusing on. And you've heard John Fish say that he wants his aces and bases. Yep. I'm ABC. I want my aces, bases, and closers. Yep. In the first four rounds. So I'm aiming for 30 saves, 30 bags, 30 wins in the first four rounds. You can't get there with all. You can't get to 30 with all of them, but I want to get to 30 for at least two of those categories, and at least get halfway there. If I'm saying only going to get one starting pitcher, I'll get 15 wins.
I was about to say you'd have to go two starting pitchers with your closer plus your bags. If If you're in the top end of the draft, that's very feasible.
You could do it. You could get 30 of each in the top end, but I think near the back is almost impossible. So you won't always be able to do that, but that's really your, that's really what I'm aiming for, and that's really what I'm trying to strive towards, whether or not I succeed or not in those first four rounds. That's why guys like Aaron Judge I'm out on.
Yeah. I like that idea, though. It makes a lot of sense because if you have that quote-unquote floor – after round four, you have a lot more options throughout your draft. You're not at the mercy of, I got to chase this, I got to chase that, whatever. That's why you kind of said, well, Aaron Judge kind of doesn't, you know, check the box. But then again, if he falls to round five, which he won't, but it allows, like, you can go for power there and get that after you lock in your 30-30-30, which is interesting. Yeah, I like that's actually a nice little base to have there, especially with the closer situation. So you're going after the Hendricks of the world, the Haters, maybe the Iglesiases, those guys. And I don't blame you at all. It's I'd love to. Where's kind of, I guess, where's your cutoff of, I got to have one of these dudes?
Probably Chapman. Okay. Like I can wait. I can wait till Chapman. I think now I'm starting to get a little bit more antsy and trying to get in a bit earlier, but I think I'd say Aroldis Chapman would be my cutoff. There's certain guys that like, that I maybe don't want that other people will in that range. Like I don't want Romano just because of the uncertainty with him right now, in my opinion. But that's the one thing about drafting in the back end of the draft that's good is it's sort of like a sweet spot for those closers, like those decent closers. That's the one good thing about having like a pick 12 to 15 is like you can get one of those closers for sure.
Yeah, at worst, you should land on like an Iglesias or an Diaz or something. So definitely.
Yeah, I've seen it get pushed where like you have to get Presley, but there's been some crazy like those four honeys. There's been some crazy ones I've seen people show me boards for that gets crazy. But yeah, you're right. You should get one of those guys there.
Yeah, on paper. Yeah. Yeah. But that's where I hate being in the middle though, because like you're sitting there looking at okay, there's like these four closers left, so I can go get this guy, and then I can get one of those four when it comes back, and they're all gone. It's just like, so then it's like, well, I'm not going to force my hand to go take Jordan Romano now. I'll try for him or someone else later and get, and then that guy's, those are all gone. It's a mess in the middle for me, at least personally. I feel like I've made it work okay, but it's not an easy feeling as we've talked about. But yeah, I'm with you. I try to get at least one of those. I have a lot of Edwin Diaz, and it's a guy I usually don't get a lot of, but it's stable. Like it's what he does. And the way it might be even better this year if Scherzer can stay healthy, which is an if. I don't have a lot of faith in DeGrom, but maybe miracles happen. I don't know. But they should win a handful of ball games, which gives him a good save situation. So I think he's in play for sure. So we'll see. How do you go about drafting these injured guys? I know I've heard your opinions, but how do you go about the DeGroms of the world and all these other guys that we know, if healthy, are elite, but that's a gigantic if right now?
Yeah, I don't consider DeGrom healthy right now. Like it's one thing about it's one thing with somebody being injury prone, like I don't know, Byron Buxton.
Yeah,
like he's not injured as far as I'm concerned right now. DeGrom right now is injured, so I'm staying away from DeGrom. DeGrom will be on zero by teams. Kershaw, Syndergaard, those guys probably won't be on my team. Rodon's a tough one. I haven't got a lot of him, but it's so tempting, but. He sort of gives me that same Lamette vibe as last year. Like all the smart guys are like, there's so many smart drafters and everyone's staying away from him. So, and it was sort of the same thing with Lamette last year.
100%. Yeah, Rodon's a guy that I just can't bring myself to pull the trigger on at all. I've stared at him like, it's if you know people have a quote unquote brand like these are your guys. I've always been anti Blake Snell, but where he's going now, I'd go Blake Snell over Rodon. Like I'm willing to go that route, which I think says a lot to the way.
Okay. All day.
Yeah. And it's one of the things I've tried to preach a lot this offseason, and I'm trying to do in my own like fantasy baseball research and everything, is you have to be willing to change your mindset on players from year to year. Like they make adjustments in their game. We got to make adjustments in ours. So just because I didn't like Snell, but you got to look at what he did last year and the changes he made as the season went on. You carry that over, you might get, you know, closer to the Cy Young Snell than the home run derby pitching Snell. So you might get like different things there. You never know. And his draft price isn't astronomical this year, which is a beautiful thing. So you got that going for you. Speaking of starting pitchers, you mentioned you've gone pocket aces a couple times. You've gone like hitting early. We kind of, I think, both like the idea of hitting early a little more potentially. But if you're going with your 30 win philosophy, You're getting at least one early. How are you approaching starting pitching as a whole? Like, are you looking to lock in one of the top five or six, or you just want like a couple workhorses type thing?
I'm trying different things. I'm getting a lot of if I'm drafting from the back, like eight or in the middle to the back, I'm getting a lot of times I'm going pocket aces in that scenario. I'm getting a lot of Cole, Burns, Wheeler, Woodruff, those guys in that area. I think I've got one Bueller. And then in that case, you really have to force yourself to not take pitching for a while, I think, because there is, like, I think, like you said, it's so deep. You got guys like in the 6-7 range and like even the 9-10 range that are really, there's some really good pitchers that sometimes fall like way further than they should, just because there's a lot of them. So I think pitching is, like, the way it stands right now is not as pushed up as it, I don't think it's going to get pushed up as it did last year. The same way, as I said, hitting is a little bit shallow right now, but all that can change when pitchers get injured and offensive players sign and you know where they're going, and the landscape will change a little bit. But I think pitching, yeah, you can wait a little bit more than usual this year, but it's tough. It's really a balancing act, and it's every draft is different.
It's a balancing act, and it's an act of I guess staying true to your form, because like you said, is you'll take those guys early, and then you tell yourself, okay, I got to get bats because that's going to dry up, and you're doing your thing, and then these pitchers are still sitting here, and you're just like, how do I pass on this? Because that's what I did, and we haven't continued on from our FPAS draft that we did like right after, like the playoffs were still going on. And I remember drafting going, how is this starting? Like, I have so many starting pitchers. Like, I'm so screwed in that league, probably. Just like going, just in my head right now, we did, I think, 23 rounds, 25 rounds. I probably have like 10 starting pitchers. That tells
you're
you exactly
not screwed. You're not screwed. Because
I'm not screwed because it was so early.
There's no money in the draft, right? So it doesn't matter.
Fair enough. There is no money. That's true.
You're not screwed. It's just fine.
But it was a great exercise to know exactly, like, hey, this just got interesting because I could probably do things differently is what it comes down to. And my closer situation is a disaster because that stuff gone. So a lot of learning.
Giovanni Gallegos went in the third round. That's why.
Yes, Paul Sporer. It was so much fun drafting with Paul Sporer. And then later that night, walking into the live sleeper on the bus thing after I've had a few cocktails, talking about Gallegos and Austin Meadows in like round 8 or 9 or something. It was so much fun talking to Paul Sporer about that. But he took it like a champ, as Paul Sporer would do. You mentioned the corner infield is a position that kind of gets to you. I heard you talking about on your recent podcast with John L, Big John Stud, about corner infield. Is that the biggest position you're really concerned with right now, or are there other positions outside of closers, obviously, that is a position that you're focusing on getting early?
No, that's the biggest one, and for sure. Corner, I think everyone's saying third base, but I'm finding first base is also kind of iffy. Let me backtrack. People are saying that J-Ram could be the 1.1 overall because the third base is so slim. I don't really feel that way. I think that Ramirez is good. He's a top five pick, but like to push him like over other players that you think are better just for the position, I think you're doing it for the stolen bases at third base, which is the reason, not because the rest of the third base is that bad, because it gets bad to a point. But after J-Ram, you still have like, I don't know, 6, 7, I don't even know, I'm not counting, the good guys. You just got to get them at some point. Where then you'll be passing on guys in the 6th and 7th round instead of a better player in the first round. So I'd rather just have the better player in the first round. Not to say I haven't taken J-Ram early, because I'll mix it up there. But I think at a point like where we are in our draft right now, and I just picked, and I've been struggling to, like, it just drops off at around round 15, both third base and first base. Just like, it's not that they're bad players, it's just like you don't really know what you're getting with them. Like Brandon Belt, is he going to be platoon? Josh Donaldson, is he going to get hurt? Frank Schwindel, is that guy like for real? Like, he seems like he is, but I don't know. And then like even Spencer Torkelson went in round 16, don't know when he's going to be up. Bobby Delbach, he didn't have a full-time job, but he's good.
Zach just mentioned all my first basemen. No, I'm just kidding. But I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. It's rough.
Yeah, no, I was pissed when you took the guy in round 16. I still got a guy that I kind of like too, but Yeah, I'm like, oh, you're going that early, eh? Because you were messaging me last night. I'm like, we were talking
which about guy, which guy did I take in 16?
Nate Lowe.
Oh, yeah. Okay, this is how fun it is because we probably research as much as many people. Obviously, some people do more than us, but I literally had on a piece of paper in my office like a little late last night before I made that pick. I wrote down Brandon Belt, Nate Lowe, Dahlback, and Schwindel. I wrote all four of them down, and I just kept going back and forth on Fangraphs pages and just like going through the motions. But then I looked at my team. The only reason I finalized on Lowe is A, out of all those guys, I'm confident, barring an injury, he's playing all season at first base for the Rangers. They have no reason not to. B, I like the fact – I think he's the biggest benefactor of Semien and Seager coming there because that's RBI potentials for him. And last but not least, out of all four of those guys, he could potentially, maybe, steal 10-plus bases. Maybe. Like he'll definitely steal more than the rest of them, even if it's eight. And my team needed steals because of other things I'd done. I told you I'm way off the board on this draft compared to usual. So, I'm with you on that. Corner infield. Yeah, I usually go first base early, and having to stare at those four for a long time will remind me again to go first base early, as you mentioned. It's not pretty for sure. But I do like the comment you made about third base. It's deeper than people give it credit for. But it, like I call it murky waters. So like you said, you have to know when to go get them. That's the difference at the position. So it's
there. You can play chicken, but then you can get bitten there if you walk the tightrope and fall off.
Yeah, you'll have to make sure you go like a round or two early. That's for darn sure. Are there any positions outside of, we said, starting pitching that seems kind of deeper than usual?
I think outfield's kind of deeper. I think outfield is deeper than people give it credit for. I think there's some good guys outfield and middle infield. Basically, you could be getting guys because I think you're always chasing steals in these drafts. I feel because I'm always chasing steals because I'm not drafting like those rapids in the early rounds. So I'm always needing steals later, and I feel like there are those guys that like the guy that I just took. Not going to mention him, but like it can chip you in for 10. Stolen bases later in the draft. You got some middle infielders like Colton Wong, just like guys you can get post 200 in the middle in the outfield. They can chip in there. Whereas corners, it's just like not only are you getting guys that have those questions that we previously mentioned, but they're also not getting you any of those scarce categories.
True. Yeah, no, that makes things tricky. I don't know if you want to mention these guys, but I figure I'll ask you anyways. Sure. Who are some of the names that you seem to have on a lot of your teams?
Okay. So I have nine players that are on over 50% of my teams.
Okay.
Three of them are going within like between pick 150 and 250. So I've no one like I haven't loaded up on a lot of super early guys, but you got to get in these drafts to see, but I'll give you one guy. I have 64% of Brad Boxberger.
Okay. I like that.
I have 16 shares of Brad Boxberger. So he's like a sort of like a blue chip stock I'm hoping hits.
Yeah, that's one that if he slides into the closing role, we've seen him do it before. So it's definitely worth a shot. I can give you that much. Who are potentially guys that you don't have much of that you are saying, you know, I might need to maybe start looking at going farther down the road?
Just guys like after my ABC, like the first four rounds, the ABC rounds, like after then, just guys that like I'm okay on like passing on. It's sort of like the Cooper Cup fallacy in football. I'm like, oh, I'm okay on passing on him. No, you're not. So guys like Matt Olson, Joe Musgrove, Fried, Lynn, just guys I haven't gotten, nothing wrong with them. It's just like maybe I need to diversify my portfolio to those guys because they're just guys like maybe I'm just like hyper-focused on other players like that. Those 10 other players, but I should really like look at them. Like, not only is there nothing wrong with these players, but these players could be very, very good. And I don't know. There's sometimes you just don't. It's sort of like a blind spot.
I'm with you. Musgrove is one for me for sure. That's a name that you mentioned there that I know I've passed on many times. I just put a poll out there with four different guys close to ADPs, and he finished very high. And a lot of the comments loved Musgrove. And I'm sitting there just going, I have none. Like, what am I missing in this boat here that? That does it. You look at his profile, it kind of makes sense. So I get that one for sure as an option for Musgrove. let's hit up some listener questions as we have some fun ones here. And you got some good data on some of these as well. But we'll start with Cujo, Mr. Cutline himself. Very, very strong cutline player. Right. Do you have any favorite late starting pitchers? I know Zach is going deep for these DCs, and he's been in enough of them that his targets can't be that secret anymore. Looking for the late volume and cutline drafts, late gems like Webb, Rogers that last year killed it. Thanks, gents.
Well, if they're not that secret, then why are you asking? Got to get in these drafts, Cujo.
I know one guy. I know one guy I've taken a lot of late is Brady Singer. I'm just a believer in the strikeout profile. Could be totally wrong. I know some people hate him, but
I like him. Just he ended injured, so I'm sort of like a little bit scared about that.
There's a bunch of those ended injured guys in the, around that same area of the draft. And I'm just like,
it was an arm too. Like I don't mind other injuries. I don't know. Yeah, no, I like Singer. I liked him last year a lot, but. I think if he's healthy, I think he's a great price.
Yeah, I think he's a big time price if he's healthy. I know Johnny L mentioned a lot of the Royals guys. It seems like a yearly tradition with the Royals. It's an ugly team, mm-hmm. but they always have a bunch of late round options like them, the Twins. I'm not on a lot of the Twins guys, that's for sure. But there's a handful of guys, especially the Royals stands out to me. I'm trying to think of teams off the top of my head. The Marlins have a lot of youngsters that don't have solid spots in the rotation, but there's like four guys you could see making maybe like 10 starts each, which could be interesting super late. Like
Meyer and Edwards.
There's a few of them.
Edward Cabrera.
And they have a couple that are quite intriguing as well, barring, and they might trade guys to open up spots for them because that's what they do. So, and then the Cubs have a few as well to because they have a mess going on there. So bad teams have late starting pitching options.
Pittsburgh,
the one that I've slowly started gaining interest in, but I like guys that strike guys out. But I guess the later in the draft, you can't be too picky. It's more give me innings and see what happens. Josh Rogers of the Nationals is going late, and he's actually projected to be in the rotation to start the year. So
somebody was mentioning that to me recently as well.
And he's going super late. So keep that one in mind, I guess, if you want to go there. The beauty of cut lines, though, is he gets like waiver periods, so he can fix his problems. Jake, the Dust Mite, asks, how many rounds are you okay pushing up a player based on quality of cameo performance?
Three. So no, I would draft Miles Straw in the fourth round.
Well, he would fill your B column for you, so you're good there. Your ABC, he definitely would fill that for you. So you can go pocket aces, get Liam Hendricks, then Miles Straw in round four, and you got your ABC covered. You're good.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And then especially because I don't consider any other categories for offense, then really, who cares?
You're golden. Yeah. Since you do a lot of drafts and holds, you likely have exposure to some early round players with injury risk in order to diversify. What's the highest percentage of exposure you're okay with in a top 75 player?
Probably 40%.
Yeah. Well, it's because something you mentioned is where you're like your heavy wheelhouse of players you have a lot of is like 150 to 250. It's because you can kind of lock into your players later in drafts and be okay with missing. I guess you're never okay with missing. That's the wrong word. But you're okay kind of slipping up more than early on. It could really sting.
I'm looking at my player share page right now. I'm going down to see if I could the earliest. 36% is the earliest I see that a player top. This guy's like his ADP is like 7th or 8th round.
Okay. Yeah. So you definitely do it later in the draft. Makes a lot of sense for sure. Run DMCD, Mr. Dave McDonald says, longtime listener, first time caller. You've really taken your troll game to a new level this year. What or who was your inspiration? Do you change your approach at all coming into the year? If trolling were a pitch mix, what would your percentages be? I'll hang up and listen.
Oh, yeah. I saw this question. I forgot to prepare for it. Who's my inspiration? I don't know. I think I'm just... I'm my own person. I'm not inspired by anyone. I'm inspired by life, Dave, you know? I'm just living every day at a time and taking one day at a time and just happy to be in the baseball community and just love everyone.
I love it. The next question we got here is Phil Dussault, the robot, says, is Jack in the Box still your favorite burger spot to close out a late night?
See, he knows me. He's talking about one of my most known players.
And is San Diego your favorite location?
No, I think maybe he goes to Miami. He's talking about Brad Boxberger. Yeah. But since I'm kind of sick of Jack in the Box. I've been getting eating that so often. I've been trying to diversify, and I got some shrimp tapera in my diet. You know what I mean?
I know exactly who you're talking about. So people just listen closely to what he just said. Less than Dave has another question for you. Over under on 100 leagues in 2022, you said under already. But will John Fish be in more or less than 20 of those with you?
God, I hope under. I hope under.
Yeah, at first I was in every league with him. Now I'm in like every league with you. It's one of the two of you in every single one. It's like enough already. if you guys ever just compared your notes, your little portfolio you have would have the most ridiculous data on the face of the planet on how people draft. Something to think about.
Yeah, that's an idea you got there, Bubba.
Yeah. Mike Carter, the doc, asks, what are you recommending at this time for closer strategy in FBCs? I think you kind of already hit on that one.
I want one or two early closers for sure, based on like how bad that went last year.
Yep. And then Aaron at Fantasy T-Ball has a good question. He's a new listener this year, I believe. He's been asking questions a lot. He's trying to get into the NFBC format. So he's been asking questions to get his toes in the water. He says, if you're looking to compete in an individual draft champions and not worried about the overall, so he just wants to win his league, doesn't care about the whole cha-cha, what's a good number of stolen bases, strikeouts, and saves to target? I've never participated in a DC, but trying to learn. Thank you.
Okay, so he's only looking for stolen bases, strikeouts, and saves?
Yeah, what's the target on those? Because at least I know we've talked about saves and stolen bases as like two of your three of your ABC.
I can give them all the categories. So I looked at that question. I did a little bit of research. I have all the DC data in Excel to do different stuff with it. But so there's 303 DCs done last year, and the average number of standing game points to win up the league was 118.55. So that would be like the average winner scored 118.55. So you need to get on average 11.85 points per category. So approximately 12 out of 15, that's 80%. That's how people get to that 80th percentile. Now you'll see people post this and like the percentiles using how they get to the 80th percentile, those numbers. Like I've seen Brian Rudd post that. And if you search him in the percentiles, you'll find what he posted. But he's using all 4,545 teams, which is 303 times 15. And he's just taking the percentile, like just using a percentile function in Excel to get that. And that gets you, I'm not going to go through it, but it's going to get you, well, I'll tell you that that will get you 67 saves, 119 stolen bases, and 1,369 strikeouts. But so that's what you'll find normally. But what I did was I compiled all the data in Excel, and I did a pivot table by the league rank, so the first place teams with the associated standing gains points for getting 12 standing gains points in each category. So it's going to give you a little bit of a different answer. And if you read the process by Tanner Bell and Zimmerman, they talk about using the slope function to calculate the SGP factor. That's because teams that score like at the top, the 15 standing gains points for those categories are usually an outlier. So the slope will sort of go like that, and then up near the end. So that's probably it's a big step up at the end because they've overshot that category to win typically. So if you look at the average, like the 12 standing game point team for each category, so not the 80th percentile, but the average it took to get to 12 standing gains point, it's a little bit different. So it's a little bit more conservative because that higher slope is going to give you a little bit of a higher number you need to shoot for. So it's actually letting you be conservative, and you actually don't need quite that much. So using that theory, the numbers you get for runs is 1,053, so 1,053, 307 home runs, 1,010 RBI, so 1,010, 160 in stolen bases rather than 119, a 261 average, 86 wins, 66 saves instead of 67, 3.66 ERA, 1.17 WHIP, and 1,356 strikeouts, so a little bit less. Now, I know this is going on a bit longer, but he's talking about
it. I like this. It even makes sense to me, which is never an easy thing. So this is good.
So I went a step further because he's talking about a standalone league. I want to help this guy. I know Aaron, we've talked as well. So I want to answer his question. And oftentimes people talk about punting saves, and saves are a big category. So now let's say you did want to punt saves in a standalone league. Take that 118.5 standing gain points, which it takes to win that league, subtract the 1 point you're going to get for saves because you're going to punt it. That brings you to 117.5 points for the other nine categories. So take 117.5 divided by nine. Now you're going to need 13 standing gains points in each category instead of 12. So basically you need an extra point in each category if you're going to punt saves, maybe a little bit more. Or that works out to the 87th percentile. So I have these numbers based on this more specific calculation. So if you wanted to punt saves, you will need 1,074 runs, which is 19 more than you would otherwise, 318 home runs, that's plus 11, 1,030 RBIs, that's plus 20 more RBIs, 123 stolen bases, which is plus 7, and a 263 average, which is plus 2 points. You need 89 wins, which is 3 more than the 86, 71 saves, which is 5 more, a 3.58 ERA, which is quite a bit lower than the 3.66, and then you need one notch lower of the whip, which is 1.16, and then 1,389 strikeouts if you're going to punt saves, and that's plus 33, which might be the difference between the strikeouts Aaron Nola would give you in the second, third round and Jack Flaherty in like the fifth or sixth round. So that would make sense, because if you're going to forego Hendricks and punt saves, you can get Nola instead of Flaherty.
What's really interesting too is you could say you're a guy that goes, say, two closers in the first seven or eight rounds, per se. The bat and the starting pitcher you might take instead of those two closers could cover both of those things, like you said. Especially that bat. If you take a bat early, if he has to need like seven steals and 11 homers, and if the guy's hitting 11 more homers, he's probably covering the runs and RBIs you need, hopefully. That's interesting. I never even thought of that, because say you are someone that just comes in and you're like, okay, the overall, you know, check would be awesome, no doubt about it. Be pretty freaking sweet. But if I'm playing 150 to get in, I just want to win my league, get over a grand and win my league. It's an interesting philosophy.
That's what a lot of people interesting do. Philosophy. In the four honeys, that's what some people might do, because the 150 is a lot of your prize, a lot of your money that you buy in with goes to the overall. But if you're doing the 400, it's not as much. A lot of that, most of your money goes to that league prize in the NFBC, in Greg and Derek's pockets. I'm just joking. But very little of it goes to the overall. So I've only one person, I've looked at these DCs last year, Tyler John. He's a very good player and he's placed very high. He's the only guy that I saw that I think it appears purposely punted saves in some of those. So he did try that in that strategy. And in fact, his best team, he had like 50 or 40 DCs that he did enter last year. His best team, I think he finished like 23rd overall, had no saves, zero. So, if he had the 80th or 90th percent of saves, he would have won. He would have won the overall.
That's an interesting way to approach it. I'm glad Aaron brought that question up. I'm glad you got that data there, because even myself, who was feeling pretty crappy about my draft right now because of trying to figure it all out, I'll take the winning the league part just to make me feel better. But I'm not saying I'm going to, but now I don't have to feel like I have to push so much in certain things. It's one of those deals, like if you're drafting and you kind of miss out on where you want to go type deal, you can still navigate the draft enough to have a very competitive team that could run hot type thing. So that's a very interesting set of numbers you threw out there for sure. I'm intrigued by that. Very, very intrigued by that. Last question we have for us today is from Robbie Lester, the Canadian Toby, if anybody's curious. What is the – and I swore that was a Photoshop picture.
Is that an actual picture?
I think Dave McDonald said his actual picture. I swear to God that was my co-host.
I thought it was a Photoshop. Like, it looked – you know, like the Family Guy, like those, like, bodybuilders that, like, go on the unicycle? It looks like a mix of Toby in that sense.
Yeah, it's impressive. What is the likelihood that Toronto starts the season with the combo of Espinal and Smith as their primary third baseman?
I would be guessing, but there's a real, very real possibility that Espinal was good down the stretch. He had over 300, but I think he had a high BABIP. Toronto seems willing to spend some money or do some trades. So if I had to put a number on it, like, I think those two guys, like, in a share of third base, 35% chance that happens. Hopefully they get Jose Ramirez.
That would be fun. If they got Jose Ramirez, my goodness, that'd be wild to see that team play out. Because, you know, everyone's already talked about it. You look at, like, the Razzball player rater from last year, and every Toronto player was basically felt like they were in a top 10. It was ridiculous how good that offense was. Sure, they lost Semien, but, you know, you throw Jose Ramirez, I'll take that trade. Go throw him out there. No problem with that at all. So that'd be
We might be in another lockdown soon here. We actually already are. Yeah. We're already locked down again, so maybe they're going to ship Toronto back to those small minor league ballparks.
Good old Dunedin, yeah. Bambox and Dunedin.
As of now, you can't even go, like, the Raptors and Leafs, you can't even go to games, and it's gone. Like,
I legit thought about that the other night when I saw the Ontario lockdowns and everything. I was like, yeah, we might get Toronto back on the road again. This just got really, like, I'm drafting thinking they're going to be in Toronto, and all of a sudden it's like, this might change.
I doubt it, but maybe. You never know.
I doubt it too. I think we'll see. I don't want to get into that whole freaking dilemma, but
I hope not.
That changes. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if I do have a lot of shares of Toronto Blue Jays, I still want my life to be back to normal.
Yes.
rather than my fantasy team's back.
That's what I'm thinking. It's like, let's just hope that they're in Toronto, because that means good things are still happening about that point in time.
So, yeah.
But let's go that direction for sure. But we're going to wrap it up there, Mr. Zach Waxman. Go ahead and plug your podcast and whatever else you would like to plug here before we wrap this bad boy up.
You can find me on Twitter, being just a good guy on Twitter. And listen to my podcast. It's actually, we're hitting my stride on the podcast here. I think I'm getting the hang of this podcasting thing. There's nothing stopping you from, I'm going to plug podcasting in general. There's nothing stopping anyone from starting a podcast. I'm just a guy that plays fantasy baseball. I don't know. And, if people say there's, anything in your way, be it gates or anything like that, it's just a myth. There's nothing. You can do whatever you want.
Yep. It's a free country. We're all welcoming. Mm-hmm. So come on down. And if you want to listen to Zach's podcast, every once in a while, he has his drunk uncle on there. It's a lot of fun. So go check that out. That's for you, Godfather. But but I have to ask you this, because I don't think he'll listen to the show. And if he does, I don't think he'll make it this far. He'll fall asleep. But did you see his Twitter post about how he's been working out with the guy from Run DMC for years and he just not figured out who he was?
I saw that, but I didn't understand it.
Well, that's fair enough. I lost it. Yeah, so basically. Is that the guy from Run DMC? Yeah, that's one of the two main guys from Run DMC. And he's worked out with him forever, but he didn't realize that's who it was. I'm just like, goodness gracious, man. and I hope he knows I'm just messing with him, so have fun with that as well. But we'll wrap it up there. Make sure you follow Zach on Twitter at @MilesStrawMVP. How long is the title staying for?
I don't know. We'll see until he wins the MVP.
Okay, well, this might be for a while then. But at @MilesStrawMVP, the Draft Champions Podcast. Zach Waxman, everybody, thanks for joining me, my friend.
Thanks, Bubba.
All right, Bench with Bubba, episode 427 in the books. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.